Welcome to the 14 News Podcast with your host, James Coppert.
Oi, oi, Minkus. As always, whoever and wherever you are in the world, I hope you're all safe and well. Welcome to the 14 News Podcast. So what I urge everyone to do, who's listening to this, is go on Google Images and just search Kirby Moorside, North Yorkshire, and just have a look and get a feel. I really love listening to podcast interviews with authors or filmmakers of a specific geographical area that brings to life the stories of that area. And sometimes it's somewhere on the other side of the world, on a place I may never visit. But listening to them and listening to their love and passion about that area really brings me a visual kind of idea of what it's like and a cultural idea of what it's like to live there. And I'm delighted that this is one of those kind of interviews. I don't think Louise would mind me saying, I think she was a little nervous at first, and she's only done a short interview before, and I think she thought we wouldn't be able to fill an hour, but as you can tell, she was absolute quality, brilliant. And she texted me afterwards saying there was so much more that she wanted to say, so hopefully we can get her back on in the future and tell us a few more of the stories that she's dug up. Maybe when she's finished the third book and got it printed. It's called Hiding in the Dark, and I will include the link to the Facebook group where you can go and purchase it for yourself, or visit Kirby Moorside and have a wander about and get a real feel for the place, and go to the shop and get a copy of the book. So I've now purchased Zoom, so I'm paying that each month. So if you know anyone that you would like me to interview, do get in touch, and I will do my best to persuade them to come on the show. And until then, I hope you enjoy this interview. As I say, Hiding in the Dark is gorgeously presented and brilliantly written. It's a real beautiful piece of work. So I'd recommend you getting a copy of that. You'll absolutely love it. And yeah, thank you so much for listening. Let me know what you think. And without further ado, I present to you the brilliant Louise Mudd. So welcome. We are interviewing Louise Mudd. Welcome, Louise. Thank you for coming onto the show. Wherever I go, I look at the ghost stories of the area, and I went to Kirby Moorside and I asked a couple of people, and they said, "Oh, there's a book." And I went around quite a few places trying to find it, and eventually got to one place that had one left.
Right.
And I was really excited to get my hands on it. And Hiding in the Dark, I've got a copy here just to show everyone. And it was absolutely brilliant. And I was really excited to find out that you'd written it and wanted to explore a little bit about it. It's really beautifully presented. There's so much history in there and the stories as well. So basically, I think my first question is just how was your interest in this area kind of formed? And then how did the journey into this book begin?
Right, yeah, I get asked this a lot, and I often wonder myself how all this happened. It started really because I'm part of the local history group, and we try and capture stories and memories and events from the past. And quite often people say, "Where's the oldest building in town?" You know, what's, and I sat and thought about it, and I thought, well, really, it's none of the buildings that are above ground. It's all the subterranean, the cellars, the back sheds, the attics. They're the bits that don't get developed usually. So my mission was to try and find as many undeveloped cellars and attics and capture them before they either became concrete boxes in somebody's gaming studio, or, you know, they convert the attic into a beautiful ensuite. Yeah. 'Cause you can really see the bones of what the building used to be like. And of course, you have to chat with homeowners, and I think one was like a jokey comment, oh, there's nothing down there, is there? And they were like, oh, actually, now you mention it. And the more I asked people as I was recording these undeveloped spaces, the more stories started coming out about unexplained events. And quite often, the people had never told anyone. But I'm thinking, I've heard that story from someone else who used to live there. So people were telling me the same thing, but thinking it only ever happened to them. Right. And I thought, oh, there's obviously a lot of history here that's sort of unwritten. And I started sort of asking for people who had ghosts, either in their attic or cellars. And the people that came forward were not the people I expected at all. They were like people you would have down as, that's a load of rubbish. But no, I got all sorts. So that's how it started. It was a bit by accident.
Fantastic. I love that affirmation as well. When you, it's people that are potentially non-believers and they move in a house, and then I wonder if anyone else has picked up the book and gone, I used to live there, and then probably would think people think they were a bit mad sometimes.
Absolutely, yeah.
And then had it confirmed what their experiences are genuine.
Yeah, yeah. That was quite often the case. And occasionally people would tell me a story and go, oh, but you can't put my name to it because everyone think I'm insane. And so I one or two of the names have been changed to protect the innocent, as it were.
Yeah.
And I went to the next door neighbours and said, because one story was, it was about loud bangings and thumps and sounds that were like over the top for normal everyday outside life. And I'm thinking, if this was banging and clattering in this house, because a lot of the houses were quite small and in terraces, surely the person next door must be hearing it. But they never said anything to each other. And this guy had moved out and he said, you can write the story because I've left now. And all the other houses in the row were empty apart from his other neighbour. And she moved away. And I contacted her and I said, did you ever hear anything? And she went, well, I never wanted to say, but we used to hear all this banging and clattering from next door. And I always thought it was the neighbour, but he was never in when it happened. We thought he had like squatters or something. So, yeah, quite often that's a sort of indirect confirmation of what's been going on by people around them that were totally unrelated.
And what is the response when they've kind of had that kind of confirmed and that they aren't just mad, their experiences are genuine?
Some people don't like it.
Really?
Because if you're faced with something you think you can explain away in your head, and it's like, oh, it was just the computer must have fallen off the desk or the cat's been up there and knocked something. But if you then got your neighbours going, oh, yeah, I saw somebody walking through your back door that wasn't there, it's like, oh, heck. And one guy, he was really concerned because he'd had sort of a lot of emotional trauma and he thought it was something, you know, he was experiencing internally. Yeah. And then all these things happened to him and he was like, he was so terrified when he moved to his next house that it was going to carry on. And it, when it didn't, and I'd sort of said, oh, don't worry, it's not you. You're not the only one who's had that. That made life a lot easier for him because he was so relieved when he got into this new house that there wasn't any of this associated activity.
Yeah, great sense of relief. Yeah, I do investigations and I know one can sometimes trigger the other. So someone going through a lot of turmoil can pull the poltergeist activity out, which is interesting.
You've got to be careful. You've got to be careful.
But if you hallucinate, you don't hallucinate in one place as well. So
yes,
it doesn't
yes,
discriminate.
I've listened to one or two of these like skeptics explaining away everyone's experiences. And it's like, well, we all must be either half asleep all the time, or we're all suffering from sleep paralysis, or we're all breathing in these hallucinogenic mushrooms that are growing in the walls. And I'm thinking, no, one person maybe, but there's an awful lot of people doing this.
And it's interesting when there's that historical connection in terms of, you know, multiple people experience the same thing. So people could potentially hallucinate different things. If there was hallucinate, you know, they've even done, it's something I always say in my show, is they've done hallucinogenic tests in laboratories.
Right.
Exactly the same inputs.
Yeah.
And yet every person hallucinates something completely different.
Yeah,
and yet
it's weird when everyone's saying the same thing.
Yeah, you start
to think once, okay, twice coincidence, three, four times. It's like, I mean, I'm not saying I believe or disbelieve. What I do believe is what these people have experienced.
Yeah. Yeah. So a lot of my listenership's actually in the States. So how would you describe Kirby Moorside to someone that's never been there or never even been to England?
Oh, Kirby Moorside is your quintessential market town. It's one of these little places that grew up with a church and a market cross in the centre and a farm. And then over the years, it's sort of developed and expanded outwards, but it's kept its core. So somebody coming back from like the 14, 15, 1600s into modern day Kirby Moorside, they would recognise most of the street layout hasn't altered. It's grown. We've got new big housing estates and things, but quintessentially, it stayed the same. And it's not a tourist trap. It's one of these like ordinary working towns. It was the centre for agriculture, rural industry. We had lots of blacksmiths and working people lived here. And so we're not a tourist trap. If you don't know we're here, you could quite easily drive past us.
Yeah.
We've lost all our castles.
Yeah, yeah.
What we have is a wealth of, like, I call it hidden history, because it's, you can walk up and down the street. There's nothing terribly exciting to see. But when you learn about the lives that happened in these buildings and the events that happened in Kirby Moorside, it's quite a fascinating little place. And we do have quite a few people who've contacted us from, obviously, Australia is a big place, but America as well. We have one or two regular people who contact us and are fascinated and are following events in Kirby Moorside.
Fantastic. It's very Yorkshire as well, isn't it?
Very Yorkshire, very rural. And we've hung on to a lot of the old traditions and ways a lot longer than these bigger places that we call them incomers, people who downsize down south and come and retire for the idyllic countryside, but then they slowly adapt it to where they came from. Kirby Moorside, we're a very welcoming community, but we have kept our character pretty much where some of them have sort of been swallowed up.
Yeah. Yeah, with the kind of Airbnb.
Yes, we don't have so many Airbnbs.
Yeah. But you are an ancient place as well, aren't you? Like Kirby Moorside, is it church on the side of the moor? Is that what it means?
Well, it's Kirk by Moorside, and there's a big debate. It's Kirk, I think it's more of a farmstead type place beside a church. So we do have the All Saints Church, which is the oldest one in the town. But then we also have Kirkdale Minster, which is a hugely significant site, sort of in religious history and development. So we are quite well known in the academic world as well for various things.
And it is kind of nestled right on the edge of the moors, isn't it?
On the edge of the moors. We aren't in the national parks, which makes life easier for a lot of the homeowners, because once you get into the national parks, you've got to battle two lots of legislation to do anything.
Yeah.
Whereas we are on the edge, but there's quite a few villages along the edge of the moors that call themselves the gateway to the moors, but we were one of the central crossing points for people coming down across the moors. They would hit Kirby Moorside first.
Right.
Before heading off down south to London and York or across to the coast.
So I assume that's why it's a market town.
Yes, yes. We got a market charter in about 1254. So it still runs. It's still a private market. So,
yeah. That's brilliant. And there's been ancient burials as well, haven't there, that's been discovered, and Viking and all sorts.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, a lot of burial mounds are in the area. We've got like Bronze Age. A lot of them were either ploughed out because they're in the middle of a farmer's field, so it just goes over the top of it and gets rid of them. obviously, there was a lot of excited vicars back in the day in Victorian times that took up archaeology and dug these things out. But one of the big finds that was in Kirby, there's a road called How End. Now, a how is an old burial mound.
Right.
And the landlord of the pub that stood on the corner, which was the Red Dragon, he was digging out the cellars, and he uncovered all these skeletons down there.
Oh,
so obviously,
wow.
Even back in 1823, he couldn't hide them. He had to call in the authorities. And it coincided that he dug these bones up the same time as Kirkdale Caves were being explored by all these academics from down south. And so there was a wealth of like experts in the area. So the police call these experts in, and they did some excavation work, and they found Roman burial urns.
Wow.
So that they believe of these bones were like really ancient. Where these bones ended up, they'll be in somebody's filing cabinet down south in Oxford or Cambridge or somewhere,
Yeah.
labelled. But they were deemed to be ancient burials. So we know there was a Roman burial area. And obviously at Bedlam Grange, there's the Roman villa that was excavated as well in the 60s and 70s. So we know it's been settled for a long, long time, this area.
Wow. Yeah, really rich history. And a lot of the houses are stone as well, aren't they? Which is
we're very good at recycling in Kirby Moor Sand. The reason we don't have a castle is the locals tended to recycle all the best bits. When the castle fell into disrepair, they just went along, and I found actually going down into cellars and attics, there's some fantastic paneling in these places. And I'm pretty sure it was recycled out of some lord's bedroom or something up at the castle, because there's no way you would put the quality of paneling down in these cellars.
Wow.
Unless it was free.
Yeah. That's amazing. So as a historian, you're going to continually find things when potentially people like knock the plasterboards off. And
exactly. Yes. Yes. And exposing beams. Obviously, we've got a lot of connection with the coast. And I kept finding, because when I moved into my house, we had a problem with the huge beam that was holding the roof up. It went from the full length of one side of the house to the other. So we couldn't take, we could have taken it out, but the roof would have come off. And so we braced it. And we asked why it was so long, and it sort of cuts across windows and all sorts. And they said, oh, well, it's quite easy. They took all the masts off the ships that were being scrapped up in Whitby, and a lot of the roof timbers are made out of old ships' masts, which is why they're so huge and so, you know, strong.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that. What a fascinating fact. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
Amazing. So, When I told you you'd got this book, I first messaged you, you said you've done a second one and on your third.
Yeah, I know.
So Kirby Moor Sand is quite haunted.
It's a hot spot for ghosts, it's Kirby. Yeah. But what I'm finding, the more I'm talking about, we printed the first one, and I had so many people come up to me and go, well, you didn't ask me about mine. I'm like, well, I don't know. I don't know where all these people are. I can't see them, surprisingly. So I had so many stories, I thought, right, we'll do a second one. And then, of course, I couldn't get everything in the second one either. Obviously, we're a small group, so we're limited in, obviously, costs of what people are paying. We can't do huge quantities of books, so they are, you know, quite expensive in terms of Amazon purchases and sort of things like that. So we have to keep to a limit on the amount of pages that we can reasonably get into a book. But yeah, we're working on the third.
That's amazing.
The last one.
why is it so haunted?
I think it's because it's such a rich history. Like I say, the footprint of a lot of the buildings hasn't changed over the centuries. You may have extended and incorporated like two or three houses into one because they were tiny, one up, one down, some of them which are impractical for modern day. But if you think you're building on land that's been occupied and lived in for hundreds and hundreds of years, and guaranteed somebody will have died in every house, because you didn't go to hospital, you died at home, if you were lucky, or if you're really unlucky, you died in the workhouse or in the fields. So death and memories and experiences and traumas will have been going on in these buildings, if you believe all this, for centuries. So it's unsurprising to me that people sort of sense things, because that's the other thing I get, like, oh well, how come they never talked about ghosts in the old days? And I used to say to them, well, you think about a house in the old day, it would be packed full of people. There'd be people in and out all hours of the day and night. There's like six people to a room, everyone's clunking around, mum's busy running around trying to do everything, there's no central heating, all the doors will be slamming, it'll be drafty, it'll be cold. She won't be bothered by the time she gets to bed about any strange noises. That'll be the last thing they think about. So now we've got these nice central heated houses. We've got cameras. We've got time to sit and listen. There's usually only one or two people in the house. And when it goes quiet, now you can hear. Whereas in the past, you don't know what next door was doing or what jobs they were doing. You had people in and out all the time. So we've got the sort of capacity to sit and listen and concentrate a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah, we did a building recently. I'm not allowed to say what it was because they don't want it publicizing, but it's a public building and people
Yeah.
that use it don't know it's kind of haunted because, like you said, there's stuff going on. And if you hear a massive clatter upstairs, then
Yeah.
you just assume it's someone up there. But
Yeah, exactly.
if you're there on a night and it's quiet, and then while we're setting up, which is often the case on investigations, it's
Yes, yeah.
while he's setting up or when you pack down so you
Yeah.
can't get the evidence. I think on purpose. Um,
Yeah.
it was there was sounded like someone had a tantrum upstairs throwing things around, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, during the day you would have just assumed someone's dropped something and it's
Exactly. Yeah. And it's also like everyone goes, oh, well, it's a load of rubbish. I've never sensed anything. But people are all wired differently. I mean, we
Yeah.
saw all that internet sensation with what color is this dress? I mean, the
Yeah.
world couldn't even agree on what color a dress was. So you're never going to get someone to agree on whether somebody feels uncomfortable here,
Yeah.
somebody thinks it's a load of rubbish. I mean, people buy houses on the basis of how they feel.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they don't think that's unusual. They go into a house and go, well, this feels really nice. I could live here. I could see myself. Or they walk in and they go, no, I don't like this.
Yeah.
No, I can't live here. But so
Yeah.
they'll buy a huge house on the basis of that. But when you go, well, people are experiencing, oh, no, it's a load of rubbish. Can't possibly happen. Like,
Yeah. Yeah, and something I lived in house that was quite, I mean, this house has poltergeist activity, but when I first moved in this area, I moved to Brompton,
Yeah.
and that building had quite extreme activity. But again, it
Yeah.
might happen, you know, once every month, something quite
Yeah.
extraordinary. But if you
Yeah.
weren't at that spot at that time,
Yeah, exactly. You
just
miss
by
it.
chance, it didn't
Yeah.
happen, you know.
I
So
know. It's like the old adage, if a tree falls in a forest, did it really happen?
absolutely,
It
yeah.
depends.
Yeah. So what type of stone are the houses built out of?
It's quite some of it's quite high quality dress stone. Some of the bigger buildings, they recycled like the window sills and things like that. You can see the markings. Some of it, I mean, mine's terrible. It's like a dry stone wall, so you can't insulate. And some of them, you've got a bit of a mix match. So you've got brick frontage, but the side and the rear are still out of stone. So we have a real mixture. But I mean, some of the stories were coming out of buildings that are new builds
Right, okay.
that were built on an old site.
Right.
So
Oh, that's interesting.
one couple told me they used to see a Victorian nurse walk up the stairs. And these houses were only built in the 80s.
Right.
So quite where she was going or what she was doing, I've no idea. But what they were built on was the site of the old children's hospital.
Right.
So she wouldn't have been a Victorian, but I mean, Kirby's never been leading in the line of fashion. So we were quite rural. People recycled clothes for a long time. So the sort of clothes that and uniforms the nurses would have been wearing did look old fashioned. They were the high bibs, long pinnies to the floor, old sort of style. And we think that it was. If it was what they saw, it was like one of the old nurses from the 20s. It opened in 1925, and the hospital sites had a lot of sort of lot of activity. They
Yeah.
brought soldiers over from the D-Day landings, were nursed there.
Right.
We also had we had some really exciting stories about a retired home for East End prostitutes were evacuated to Kirby Moorside during the Blitz.
Brilliant.
We got some colourful stories about the activities these 90-year-olds used to get up to with the young nurses. They were used to traumatise them because all these young nurses were like 16 to 18-year-old girls. They had to do, surprisingly, they had to do like orthopaedic or geriatric nursing before they could go on to train to be like a proper nurse.
Right.
So they were dealing with these like old characters who'd lost all kind of filters. And we're
Yeah.
filling these young girls with all sorts of gory and horrible stories. And they didn't last long when they were evacuated here because they were in the 90s already. So I mean they must have
Yeah.
been truffle birds to get to 90 out of the East End of London in those years. But they're all buried in Kirby Churchyard. And so we think, you know, there's people from all over the country have ended their lives here in Kirby Moorside
Right.
by design or by accident.
It's fascinating. I didn't know anything about this, about that area. It's so fascinating. I'm
Oh
loving it.
yeah, there's all sorts going on.
Still today.
Yes.
What are some of your like really kind of favourite stories that you've discovered?
There's a lot of people say, have I seen anything? And I haven't said, I'm not one. I wouldn't have said I was psychic, possibly sensitive to atmospheres. You know, I'll walk into a room and I'll either like it or I won't like it. I won't be able to tell you why. And I went to see a little old lady that I know quite well, bless her. And she had a cellar that had been undeveloped. And she'd never gone down in there in years because she wasn't capable of getting down there. And it did mean virtually unpacking her entire kitchen, bless her. She let me dismantle the kitchen, pull the rug back to get to the hatch. And downstairs, it was amazing. You went down these weathered stone steps that had, they were lethal because they'd been worn away and were sloping downwards. But when you got down there, it was like a whole other floor. There was like three rooms down there. And I got down there, and when she, in her younger days, she put an old stove down there. So there was an old stove buried with a sheet over the top of it. But there was an old rocking chair. There was an oil hurricane lantern hanging from the beam. It looked like something out of a ghost movie. And I was chatting away. It felt really warm and friendly. It had, I think, dry rot. It was hanging all the cobwebs. It was all bright orange. So I couldn't get a clear photograph. So she was upstairs making me a cup of coffee, chatting away, because there was only like the floorboards between us. Quite a deep room, and there was a window that had been boarded up. I think it was more like the coal chute. And I was chatting away, and I said, oh, pass me your sweeping brush down. I'm going to have to brush some of these cobwebs, because if I took a photograph, all I could see is orange garlands of cobwebs and dust. And so I was chatting away. I was down there about 20 minutes. I rearranged the hanging lantern, put the chair so it looked a bit spookier, set it all up so it made a really nice image. And I was taking photographs and talking, and I'd been down there 20 minutes or so. It was quite warm. It wasn't cold. And, you know, with an iPhone, sometimes because it's so dark, you have to stand for a little while so it can pull in the light to get a decent image. And I was stood there. She was still talking to me. And I was stood facing this old window. And so the chair and the lantern were sort of on the right of me. And on the left-hand side, it was the darker corner. And I was holding this iPhone, taking the image, and all of a sudden, literally, it felt like somebody had poured a bucket of ice cold water. It came from the bottom of my feet, though, all the way up to my head. And all I wanted to do was scream and run up these stairs. And I had to be really, I didn't want to scare her. I had to be really controlled. And I was like, right, I'm coming up now. And I shot up these stairs. And I couldn't force myself to go back down there. And whatever was in there had tolerated me flapping around with me, sweeping brush and rearranging it for ever so long. And they'd obviously decided, right, enough, out you go. And I couldn't force myself back down into that cellar. Even now, thinking about going back down in there, nope.
Well, that's interesting. So you could pass that away. If it was immediate when you were down there, you were scared to go down, but not when you've been down for a while to suddenly.
Yeah, and it wasn't like it could have been somebody who'd opened a door, because it was a sealed lower floor. It was a constant temperature because it was subterranean. There was no drafts. It was nothing changed other than something in that room. And like I say, I wasn't scared. It wasn't particularly dark. It wasn't like you're walking into some of the cellars I've walked into where you open it, it's like, whoa, I can't see anything down here. It was all laid out. I'd been dressing it, and I'd obviously disturbed something. And I had a lady who was able to read images and see things that I couldn't see anything on the photo, but I sent her these images and I didn't say what had happened. And she looked at them and she went, oh, don't go down there. Well, it's a bit late. I'm sending you the photos. I've already been down there.
Yeah.
And she said, oh, no, there's a man down there with a huge dog in the dark corner. And he doesn't want you in there. He's protecting that space. I went, well, he won because I left and I'm not going back.
Brilliant.
And we did a bit of research, and there was a couple who lived there in the late, like, 1860s, 70s. And he must have been sort of a real gruff, tough type because he worked as an ostler in the stables, in the coaching inns, and he would have hunting dogs with him because, you know, they had them for protection. And he'd lived there and he'd lost two children in that house.
Right.
And she said, oh, there's other people in there he's protecting as well. And I just thought, well, I can't say it's him. I can't say it's not him. But it's interesting she's picked up on a man with large dogs protecting other people in the house.
Yeah.
And then doing a little bit of research and finding at least one family's, you know, lost two children in that house.
Oh,
so
wow.
yeah, we gave him a name and I said goodbye and I won't be back.
yeah. That's amazing. I'm also amazed that there's potentially loads of secret underground cellars that are undiscovered as well.
There is. It's fascinating because big places like our house here in Kirby Moorside, we were part of the old pub and we were always told, oh, there's bound to be a cellar under your house, bound to be a cellar. Well, we had to take the floorboards up and repair them. All there is soil under my floorboards. I haven't even got a concrete floor. It's earth floors. But another little shop in town in the marketplace that's a surprise. I didn't think they had a cellar, but the owner took me down and she went, oh, yeah, you've got to open the paneling down the side of our staircase. And you open this, it looks like a just pine paneling. You open this door and you're presented with this black hole, literal black hole. And it leads all the way down into an earth cellar.
Wow.
You're just surrounded. And it was so warm down there. It was amazing. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, it's really nice down here. And they're like, you're mad. Well, I mean, it was dark, but it didn't feel threatening at all. But that was the cellar that wouldn't allow any lights to be on.
Right.
And so when they said to me, okay, we'll take you down to the cellar. The reason why no one but it was the husband went down with me. Reason nobody will come down here is because after about 3 minutes, whatever torch you're carrying will turn off.
Right.
We've tried getting the light bulbs fixed. We've had it rewired. His son was an electrician. They've been down there. There is actually a pump for another business that runs fine. They've never had any electrical problems. And so I thought, right, I've got one of those big, my husband had one of those big LED lens lights that floodlights a field when you go out with the dogs on a night. And I thought, right, I'll take that down. That won't go out. So I went down there, had this huge flashlight on. I tried it in the shop. It was all right. We went down there. Was looking around. About 5 minutes in, it went off. I'm like, it went, I told you, it won't work. And so we got back. Yeah. I was like, oh, okay, let's go back up. As soon as I took the torch back into the shop, it came back on again.
Wow.
I went, you're joking. He went, no, guarantee you, whatever's down there, it's not a problem, doesn't want a light on.
Right.
So
that's amazing.
Like, you could explain it that there was fault with the light torch, but it worked for so long.
Yeah.
Stopped working down there. And when I came out, it was back to normal.
Obviously wants to hide in the darkness.
Obviously wants to stay undisturbed. Yes, doesn't want people down there tramping about.
That's brilliant. I love that. Yeah, we've had them. I've started doing videos with Matt and he's on the skeptical side, which is really positive. And
want to balance, yeah.
Yeah. But my torch kept going off and so I said, right, on command. I'm going to count down to from 5 to 1, and I want on 1 and want you to turn it off. And exactly on 1, it just went off. I was like,
yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, I've never tried testing any of these people while I'm down there because I'm always acutely aware I've got to get back out. And
yeah.
So you do have to go down there not thinking, oh God, there's something down there. I'd rather just go into a place cold. All the people who are psychics and mediums are going, well, don't you protect yourself? I'm like, ah, I just got out there. But I went into a shop and I was talking to a lady and she went, oh, yeah, yeah, we've got a cellar. Do you want to go and have a look? And it was this tiny hole. And I thought, oh, well, she's opened it up. I'm going to have to go down there. So I went down. And it was only halfway down. I realised it wasn't actually a proper ladder I was going down. It was a homemade one made out of thin lats. And I'm not slight. And I'm thinking, okay, it's quite a drop down here. If I panic, this ladder could go. And then how the heck am I going to get out of here? So I had to be really, really controlled. All right, okay, we'll just go around here. And there was like an old Victorian bed in the corner and there was a fireplace and there was cracks in the walls and pillars. And it's like very atmospheric. And I'm going, nope, Louise, it's fine. There's nothing here. I kept looking at the ladder, thinking, you've got to get up that ladder. You can't run up it because it's not going to hold your weight if you start stomping on it. And so, yeah, but it's easy to get carried away when it's the atmosphere rather than what's actually happening. So,
yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. There are certain places that immediately conjure up an atmosphere, and you have to kind of try and get those away, don't you, to really see what's there.
Because you've got to, you know, if you centre yourself and you think, how do I actually feel in here? Is it fine? Is it not fine? And usually after you've got past the initial, oh, it's dark, it's creepy, there's cobwebs, oh, I don't like it, to actually, do I feel scared, threatened, uncomfortable? And most of the time, for me, it's been no.
Yeah.
I feel fine. But yeah, you do have to sort of catch yourself, because it's very easy. When you see some of these programs where everyone's shrieking and running around, I'm thinking, I think you just, this is sort of self-perpetuating this rather than
absolutely
happening.
Yeah. Most of the investigations we do, I mean, we're really lucky, stuff happens quite frequently, but
yeah.
most investigators, like probably 1 in 10, something actually happens. So these TV shows are quite comical, really.
Yeah. They seem to pack a lot into a very short space of time. And I'm thinking, you're either very, very unlucky, or yes, this is been a bit manufactured for entertainment purposes.
Yeah, yeah. I'm known for going into the most, some of the most violent poltergeists and things on my own all night.
Oh,
for
well,
charity. So I do stuff like that.
I couldn't be doing with that. No. I go into these cellars, but I'm never on my own. There's somebody around, and what I find is if I keep talking, that's all I need. I don't actually need someone stood behind me. I'd rather there wasn't someone stood behind me.
Yeah, it's when they talk back though that you have to be careful.
Yeah. But no, I haven't come across any poltergeists.
Right.
In the memorial hall, there's somebody who clatters around upstairs, and there is a small staircase that leads from the ground floor up to the top floor. And forever, the kids that used to go into the memorial hall always called it the haunted staircase.
Right.
And it was one of these places, it's not been there that long. I mean, it used to be like a part of the green room for when the amateur dramatics started. Well, they didn't start till the 30s. But it takes you from the ground floor, which used to be where the farmers and butchers hung meat and things down there and sold things. And the top floor, as it is now, it was the middle floor. And that used to be where the courtroom and everything was, and used to have big meetings and anything important that was going on, including like shows eventually. It had a big enough space for large gatherings. And so there's a little tiny built staircase, and people didn't like it. And we had one of these ghost hunting groups came along, and it was the first time they'd come in, and I thought, I'll go along because I know the history of the building, so I'll just see what everyone's coming up with.
Yeah.
And it was weird. The staircase kept doing things, and I was sat next to it, not admitting anything. And in the end, I had to move away because you could hear things up and down the staircase, and I'm thinking, all these kids have always said this.
Yeah.
And on the for the second book, out of interest, to try and find out what was going on down this staircase, I took this medium lady in. And she went, oh, yeah, I can tell you. It's a guy, and he'd hung himself, and he was poor. And I can smell smoke, but the smoke isn't the reason he died. And I researched it, and we did find that a wood turner had been in there, and he had hung himself.
Wow.
And he'd done it before the memorial hall burnt down, which was the smell of the smoke.
Wow.
And that is the only time I've really been able to physically pinpoint the person, the place, the building, and the timeline all together.
And
it's quite an achievement when you find that, because it makes this scary staircase into like a place of tragedy and sorrow for somebody who was really at the end of their tether and couldn't think of any other way out and had come to his workshop and hung himself there.
Yeah,
and the reason people feel uncomfortable, he just wanted to be on his own. He was ashamed of what he did, didn't want anyone to sort of see him or acknowledge him, just wanted to be forgotten.
Yeah.
And then somebody builds a staircase right past him.
Yeah. I mean, staircases are always interesting anyway. They're in horror films, everything. It's that kind of transitional space anyway, isn't it?
It's dark, usually enclosed.
Yeah.
And there's only one way in and one way out.
Yeah.
And if there's something waiting for you or something behind you, it obviously stimulates the fight or flight reaction. Yeah. And most people leg it.
Yeah. And just so many stories of stairs and even poltergeist activities of things doing things on stairs.
Yeah.
It's interesting you said the word poltergeist. I don't know if you heard. That's why I turned my head. There was a little noise behind me. It happens when we talk about it. So it'd be interesting to hear if...
If it's picked it up. Yeah.
I once was doing my podcast and it threw some batteries at me.
Really?
While I was listening. Yeah. So.
You see, in this house, people have said, oh, haven't you got a ghost? And I'm like, I don't want to know. I'm one of these. I don't want to know. If there's somebody here, I ain't finding out about it. Because once you know about it, you've got to do something about it, haven't you?
Yeah.
Our house backs onto Kirby Churchyard. So our back shed is really dark. And the rear wall is the returning wall for the churchyard. So we're about 5-6 foot below ground level. The other side of our wall is all dead bodies.
Right.
And everyone who walks into it has this feeling of like, and I'm going, well, it will be. It's cold, it's damp, it's dark, and it's next to the churchyard. You know, it's got all the ingredients, but I don't want to know anything about it. Thank you.
I had to eat my words recently because I always say it's almost ironic that people always assume graveyards are haunted because they're actually a place once everything's finished and done that the bodies go. So even residual things you think wouldn't occur.
Yeah.
I was walking at night, and I often walk in the Dean Road Cemetery in Scarborough.
Right.
And I walked the dog, and it was a storm. It was absolutely throwing rain down.
Yeah.
And but the dog needed walking, and as I'm walking through, there was this lady sat on the bench, and I walked past her. She made us both jump because we didn't see her approaching.
Right.
The dog suddenly jumped as well and started barking. So although it was dark, there was light enough to see someone.
Yeah.
But then I thought, this lady's sat there. It's peeing down with rain.
Yeah.
It's like, I think it was about 11:30 at night. I was like, she must be maybe in need of some support.
Yeah.
So I turned around to just say, are you okay? And she wasn't there.
Oh,
and there
wow.
was no, like within seconds, there was. But what was interesting is she was completely, like, in modern clothing. She looked... Yeah. She looked kind of ethnically Romanian. She had one of those big puffer coats up on with a hood up, blue jeans.
Yeah.
But there was nowhere within the vicinity for her to
legged it all of a sudden and disappeared out of sight.
Yeah.
I think that's more disconcerting. And those are the sort of things that are more written off as, must have thought, you know, she must have moved, she must have gone.
Yeah.
So people could be seeing all sorts and just don't realize.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there is that
short attention span nowadays in the modern world.
Yeah. And there is that thing where people write things off as well because they want to assume that it's not real.
It's a lot easier, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just my imagination. Yeah.
I've had an experience with someone and we both saw it was residual. It was a cloud of smoke or mist just suddenly flung up into like this woman in a gown, like a robe, striding across the yard, hit the kind of the wall and then fizzled out.
Wow.
And it was as clear as day. It was the most clear kind of that type of thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And then he would refuse to come to my house. He would pick me up at the end of the road for years. But now you ask him about it, he goes, well, I think that's what I saw. I was like, you're pretty damn certain at the time.
It could have been that. No, it's easy to explain things away. And that's fine. That's not a problem. It's just what I found was people sort of being so dismissive of it. And it's like, oh, it's not nonsense. And it's like, well, it is until it happens to you. And when we had stories from like an undertaker, well, they're pretty bomb-proof when it comes to dead bodies.
Yeah.
Nothing fazes them. And he'd moved into a house, and for years his wife had been saying there was something. And he was like, oh, a load of rubbish. You know, he had his workshop with coffins and rest homes and everything, bottom of the garden. There was nothing. And it was only as he got sort of older and retired, and he had more time to sort of, I suppose, sit and actually appreciate what was going on, that he said, honest to God, I heard these footprints across the roof. there's no way you can have footprints. And he said, and I was so concerned, I couldn't make myself go up there to check until daylight. And he said, and I'm a flipping undertaker. So it's interesting. I wonder sometimes if it's like the stage of your life that you're at. You know, people change in their tastes, and it's whether, you know, as you get older, you're more sensitive to things, because, you know, as I say, children can feel things, and then we grow up and we're all very cynical. But as you get older, you become more childlike, don't you?
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if sometimes that's why, as you get older, you suddenly start to see or hear things you can't explain away that you used to do when you were running around and you had a deadline at 9 o'clock and you had to be to work and then you had to go do something else.
Yeah. I think as well, yeah, I think you're right. And I think you kind of, you go past childhood and then you're more attached to the tangible reality, aren't you? But
yeah,
I think maybe when you're later in life as well, you're more questioning of, of what's potentially going to happen, you know, as you pass
what's
over.
Yeah.
So then you're opening your mind to that. And then I always believe once you look into the void starts looking back. And
You want to be careful where you go. So, I mean, I've never explored, you know, becoming a medium. Somebody said, oh, well, yeah, you can train your mind to open up to, and I'm thinking, I've got enough to cope with.
Yeah.
I don't need anyone else's issues coming through.
I have stuff happen all the time, and if people have said, oh, you're obviously sensitive, you should be a medium. I was like, no, I'm all right. I'm dealing with stuff being thrown about my house. Even I bought this beautiful bowl, like beautiful, and it was really expensive. And it was one of those things like, I can't really afford it, but if I don't get it, I'm going to regret it always. And then I was talking about the poltergeist, and I hear a massive smash in the other room, and it's been thrown and smashed across the room. Yeah. So I'm dealing with stuff like that anyway. I don't want...
No, you don't need to know why and how, where, and everyone else having an opinion on it as well.
It's someone said it's a bit like singing. Everyone can sing, but some people can sing really well. And when you tune into,
can only sing in their heads.
And should definitely should, especially after I heard karaoke at the weekend.
Yes, I've seen some people who think what you think you're doing and what's actually happening is not the same.
One of my favourite stories was the coins in the first book.
Oh, the man, on the mantelpiece.
Yeah, that was an interesting one.
Yeah, that was a bit of a last minute thing as well, because it was the same lady who had the shop, you know, with the terribly dark hole that doesn't like light. She went, oh, well, it's probably not of any interest, but we had somebody in who lives in where my grandfather used to live. And he came in saying, why am I finding piles of coins on top of the mantelpiece? And she was like, I can tell you that. She went, it was my granddad. He used to annoy my grandma no end. He would stand in front of the fireplace, jingling his coins in his pockets. And before he went to bed, he would put a pile of coins on the mantelpiece. And he was like, yeah, that's what's happening. And she was like, oh, don't worry. He's a lovely old fella. He'll just be coming to check in to see if I'm still visiting. But obviously we've sold the house, moved on. She told him his name. And now this fella has a chat with him when he finds these coins.
It's interesting.
So not everything's sort of scary, banging.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just like little signs and things that just someone's been back, just had a pop through, see if you're all right.
Yeah.
But that was a nice one. That one made us smile rather than go, whoa.
Yeah. And that's not a normal thing that people do is put piles of coins there. That's to link that to a direct, you know, recent person that lived there as well I thought was fascinating.
Yeah.
I always wonder if it's, I don't know, the residual things that frequently you see, I think, are what I call a ghost. But I research mainly poltergeists, and I always find it interesting that the debate between whether it is someone from the dead or whether it is something's come in that's got a conscience that knows the behaviours of the dead that recently lived there and are redoing it.
Yeah.
So it's always interesting.
Yeah, no, well, that it was nice that she was able to give this guy sort of a nice reason for something that he was finding. He wasn't scared. It was just really odd why all these coins were just sort of stacked on his mantelpiece. Yeah. You know, they might have been all over the place because most people chuck them in a dish or You empty them onto a top of a cupboard. But no, they were all neatly packed in a little stack. And she went, oh, yeah, that's what he used to do. Don't worry about it. It'll be fine.
And I wonder, where do those coins come from as well? That's always what's interesting.
Exactly, yes. It's like, So, I mean, you've seen these ones where the coins are sort of thrown and it's, how do they materialise?
Yeah, yeah.
Are people putting them down and not remembering? Because, I mean, we do a lot of things on autopilot nowadays. Yeah. You know, you don't remember locking the door, driving halfway to work, and you just think, how did I get here? So yeah. Is he doing it subconsciously, or is he doing it for a reason like that and not remembering? It's
quite a specific thing, though, isn't it, to neatly stack coins? That takes some thought.
Not something I ever do. Mine just get chucked in a dish.
Yeah. And I wonder if they're coins with dates from the past or whether they're materialised.
Never asked him that, never thought about that, yeah.
There's a book called Jot, J-O-T-T, that covers all these things of, like, things appearing and disappearing and objects. Fascinating.
Yeah. There's one or two sort of places that have complained about things disappearing. One of them was Duke of Buckingham's house.
Right.
He's hot topic at the minute because there's that series on Sky at the minute. Is it Mary and George?
Right, yeah,
that was his dad.
Right.
The dad to the one that died here in Kirby Moorside.
Okay.
Very colourful family all ends up that one. And the Duke of Buckingham that died here, he sort of didn't choose to die here. He fell off his horse during an accident and was injured. And there's been a lot of debate on what killed him. And I actually went back to the letters that were sent at the time. And when you read it, you can see exactly what killed him. It was gangrene. But for some reason, in the history books, they all put it down to like, oh, he caught a chill, it was pneumonia, you know. Oh, he just passed away. It was like, no, he rotted from the inside out. It was really quite horrible.
Was it, am I right in remembering it was his testicle?
That's it, yeah, because he was a huge overweight. He would have gout, diabetes, high blood pressure, you name it. He had it, probably syphilis and everything else. It was one of those who did whatever he wanted, whenever he wanted. In whatever quantity he wanted. Yeah. And so, but he should never have been riding around the moors on a horse. Yeah. So when he fell off, obviously he damaged himself and knocked himself. And I did a little bit of research on the internet, and it seems it's not an injury that you find commonly here in the UK, but it's still a common cause of death in sort of the subcontinent of India and places where it takes people a long time to get treatment for an injury like that. And by the time they get in, it's, you know, sepsis and gangrene set in, it's too late.
Yeah.
Nowadays, I know we moan about a 12-hour wait, but 12 hours is long enough to stop it ever getting to the fatal stage.
Yeah.
And it's quite common there. And linking the sort of the quick decline that he had, because obviously the testicles and everything lead straight into your major internal organs, it doesn't take long for all the bacteria just to flood and overwhelm the system. Mm. And like the letters were saying, he was confident, the Duke of Buckingham was confident it was going to be fine because he felt fine mentally and in his head. It was just he didn't realise the poison was sort of spreading upwards, and it took a long time. It took longer for his brain to register that there was a major problem. And he died in the bedroom and in Kirby, and it wasn't the best place for him to die. And they ended up having to scoop his innards out, and they buried theirs in Kirby Churchyard. And then there's various stories about how they got him back down to Westminster, where he had to be buried. Obviously, he was a lord of the manor. He wasn't going to be plumped into Kirby Churchyard.
Yeah, yeah.
But they did sort of a DIY embalming thing to stop him decomposing any further. So his intestines are registered in the burial register at Kirby Moorside. So there's a bit of him up here and there's a bit of him down in London. But that house has a lot of activity goes on, but it's all quite cheeky.
Right.
People who live there sort of live with the whatever's going on. They frequently lose keys, jewellery, silly little things. The lady that lives there now, she said, we came back from holiday and had a large, you know, brimmed sun hat. She said, I put it in the bedroom. I went back into the bedroom. It had gone. I spent 6 weeks looking for this hat. I'd forgotten all about it. And then it turned up in the middle of the kitchen worktop. There's no way I've accidentally forgotten, picked it up off the floor and put it on the worktop. She went, it just disappears. And when she gets cross, she sort of shouts at, they call it George, whatever's there. Just say, for God's sake, George, I need that back now. Will you stop playing about? And a couple of days later, whatever's missing is found.
Brilliant.
And it's like, how do you live with that? It's bad enough losing things on your own without somebody else playing tricks as well.
Yeah, yeah. I've got ADHD, so I misplace things everywhere all the time.
Yeah.
But it's a nightmare. I definitely want one more.
No.
I did wonder.
It's interesting because, like, say, for some people, that would be too much.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be able to cope with never knowing if something's going to go missing or not. But the house itself, when you go into it, it's got a real warm, cozy feel to it. Even though the upstairs bedrooms, people have seen characters. There's like a guest bedroom, and it's against the wall. And the character, it's a lady, walks from one end of the top floor across the bottom of the bed and through a wall. And for ages, they didn't believe the guests that were saying this. And it wasn't until I had the opportunity to go up into the attic of the next door property that I discovered that there was a doorway there, because next door hadn't developed it. They just put insulation in there and left it. So when you poked your head up there, it was just structural beams, fascinating place. Didn't dare go up there because I didn't know whether the ceiling would support me. But you could see quite clearly built into the wall, there was a doorway. So where the figure was going from one place looked like a solid wall. She was actually passing through the doorway that is still there.
Amazing. That's another confirmation.
It is. And you start to think, oh, well, there might be something in it then.
Yeah. Fascinating.
And I don't know whether you've researched. The colour red seems to come up all the time. People
right.
see flashes of red associated with these figures.
Right, okay.
And I did try and work out, why is everyone wearing red? Because in the olden days, it was all drab colours. So why are people seeing red? This figure sort of was like dull red. And I don't know whether it's right or not, but somebody told me that red's one of the wavelength of the colour. It's
right.
One of the last ones that fades or something like that.
Right, okay.
Which is why we're maybe picking up with our vision, the red colour's all that's left.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting, yeah.
That was interesting. I don't know whether that's right or not.
I've not heard that, but yeah, I don't know.
I'm not an expert.
Possibly, yeah.
But it's something to do with the colour waves. And
that's amazing.
Strength
I love
of it,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a hall in Leicester that has a doorway, and for centuries they'd seen a Tudor lady from what the place, I always forget names, but a Tudor lady walked through the door, and it's an English heritage site, so they're not like going to wreck a wall for nothing, but this had been seen that many times. They actually looked at the wall, took the plaster off the wall, and there was a Tudor doorway in that very spot.
Wow, yeah, so, you just love things like that.
Yeah, I was just going to tell you the story that we did just after lockdown.
Yeah.
The first one, we got a call from this lady who was panicked because items of clothing kept disappearing.
Right.
And the final straw was this brand new jumper that she bought. And I went in and normally I said, like, you just ask. And that's the first thing we do. And kind of asked and said, look, gave it a bit of a telling off. You know, it's not fair. They wanted it back. We heard a bang in the kitchen, and a few of the doors in the kitchen cupboards has opened.
Yeah.
And then when we went back into the living room, the jumper that she was talking about was on the sofa.
Yeah.
Where we'd just been. And it's been missing for about 6 months, I think she said.
It's interesting because personalising these things and talking, I mean, sometimes you get more results by being nice to these things than trying to drive them out and banish them and all this. It's like, just live alongside, you know, just get on. As long as you can ask them to give it back, enough's enough.
Yeah.
And you can cope with that. I can't see there's a problem.
I love it. And you can always call me in if you can't.
Oh, right, fair enough.
Talk to them. I've taken up quite a bit of your time. So just before I go, I'd like to just ask you one question about, like, the local folklore that you include as well.
All right, yeah.
And then finally, I want to ask you how people can get hold of the books. But you've covered some of the things like the bar guest and stuff like that, and some of the other local folklore, which I absolutely love as well. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
The bar geist, yeah. Now we don't. There's a debate on the name. Guy Trash, bar geist. It's like a big black dog that there's quite a lot of stories in the past which you could dismiss, because I mean, there have been wild dogs living all over the place. But I'd never expected to find anyone who'd admit to seeing a bar guy, sky trash, whatever. But I had two people from completely different times tell me about this. One was a travelling family, and he'd been walking back from the pub. And he said he knew for a fact beside him was a huge black dog, and it was keeping pace, and he was walking along the path. And for some reason, he knew if he looked at it, it would attack him.
Right.
He just kept, and he could feel the almost like pressure pushing him into the wall. But he just put head down, kept walking, not there, not there, not there. And then all of a sudden it was gone.
Wow.
And you think, oh, well, you know, coming back from drunk, you know, strange thing to come up with, big black dog. And then I was talking to the ex-mayor here, and he went, oh, yeah, yeah. One morning, one of my mates was driving back along the main road. So, I mean, it was, what, 90s? You know, we've got cars and people around. He said it was early morning. And he said he's same sort of area. So it's by the playing fields, which has always been associated with spirits as well. And he said there's a seat just on the corner near the sports field. And he said, my mate drove back 6 in the morning. And he said he swore on that seat was a huge black dog. Wow. And it was watching him. And it's like, well, it's a bit odd.
Yeah.
And it was only after I'd put the two together. And it was like, oh my goodness. So yeah. The same area, same apparition. And it takes a lot for fellas to admit they've seen something weird. But both of them told me about this black dog. And I just find it fascinating, because nobody really knows whether the black dog appears because something's going to happen to you, or something terrible's going to happen to somebody else and it's a warning, or it's there to protect something terrible from happening to you. It's weird. So it depends on how you see these things coming up as to whether he took it as it's going to get me, I've got to keep going. But maybe it was protecting him from wandering about and falling over or something. It kept him upright and focused and got him home.
That's an interesting way of looking at it.
There's two sides to all these stories, which is what I find fascinating.
I know the Bargeist is meant to, if it likes you, it'll help you. And if it doesn't, it can lure you to its death in the folklore legend.
Yeah, it's it depends. Again, be nice to these things.
Yeah.
If you don't believe in them, just give them a nod and acknowledge them. And
good evening. Yeah. Not all terrifying.
No.
I just interviewed Paul Sinclair, who he's just done a documentary called Wolflands.
Right.
And it's about what he deems an interdimensional werewolf that's in this area.
Right.
And he's done a whole documentary on it, and he got a few people to come on recordings, but then he's, you know, they said that, you know, for everyone that would talk, there was probably 10 people that said, well, I did, but I don't want anyone to know.
Exactly. Yeah. And you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't, because nobody will ever believe anything nowadays with AI.
Yeah.
Everyone will just go, oh, well, obviously they've just made that up. You've just imposed that. You've just done this. But for the people it happens to, it must be awful, because you've got no way of getting, you know, even if you plonk them in front of them, they've gone, ah, wait, that's just dummy. You've made that up, you know.
And I think sometimes that's the point. It's like I said, the whole, we get the most activity when we're setting up or shutting down, because it's that personal experience that almost tests your view of reality.
Yeah.
So it's for you, I believe, anyway.
We were all very confident until recently the earth was flat. We went, the sun, everything went round us, and that was guaranteed science.
Yeah.
So never say never is my opinion.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Thank you so much for your time. It's been, I told you, you worried that we were speaking for an hour. It's been really easy.
I talk for an hour.
I could talk to you for another hour, but where can people get hold of the books?
Right, so we've got two books. The first one that you've got is Hiding in the Dark. The second one is called Reaching Back into the Dark. And we have them, we sell them through our own Facebook page. So you can contact us through the Kirby Moorside History Group Facebook page. Or we do have copies in the shop in Kirby Moorside. So if you wanted to go in, you can physically get a copy there.
Wonderful.
£10 each. We try and keep them as reasonable as possible. But they are still. And there's a third one coming out for Halloween this year.
Fantastic.
I haven't got a title yet.
It's brilliant. And they are, you know, they're worth every penny. They're really beautifully presented and the information, and it's absolutely fantastic.
We try and get a mixture of like factual history and stories, and just to make them entertaining and informative.
Brilliant. And brilliantly written and a labour of love, because they're not going to sell millions because they're about a tiny little place. So
exactly.
They're such a beautiful thing, and you really deserve a lot of credit for it. Well done.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you so much.
All right. No worries.
Thank you for listening to the 14 News Podcast. Please check the show notes for the link to Ko-fi to buy James a cup of coffee to help him stay awake while he writes the show. You can also show your appreciation by leaving a review and telling your friends. Until next time.
Brr.